Welcome on into the 9 o'clock hour, the final hour of the full four tonight. Chris Thomas, 6 to 10, weeknights here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Haven't talked any college football yet tonight, so we're going to rectify that, and then we'll get back into the Atlanta Falcons discussion. Right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in one of our good buddies, Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports. Make sure you check out his work there. Joe, we got the initial CFP rankings last night. Any surprises, anything that they did to just try to make us angry, or were you pretty much in line with what they had?
No, I mean, in terms of surprises, I was shocked by how, like, actually they might have done a good job. I'm, like, blown away by this is the first time that they've put out a ranking, even an initial ranking, and it kind of makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of what we saw on here that was a lot stronger than what's been coming from the AP poll, which the AP poll has been atrocious this season. They gave a lot more respect to some of these Big Ten teams that have been pretty solid, and they didn't overinflate the current ACC situation with how much of a mess that's been. I really like the fact that, like, Iowa and Washington were placed where they were. I'm very low on Tennessee, so for them to be at 25 made a lot of sense, and they should be on the right on the outside. The only thing that I'm kind of, like, waiting to see how it plays out, I don't think this Oklahoma team is as good as their record indicates. And I'm waiting to see how they finish up this next month of November, how they play against Alabama. I think that they're going to start to fall, and they're going to be a little bit more on the back end of the top 25 instead of at that 12 spot.
Where did you stand on the A&M deserves to be number one debacle?
I'm out on that conversation. I think that Ohio State has proven since the Texas game, I know that they haven't played very many challenging games, but they've dominated their way through their schedule. They also have a game against a ranked Washington team that was a win for them. In Indiana, you look at every metric that you want to, every EPA, rushing, passing, offense and defense, everything that they do it at an elite level. They're the tops of most categories, not just like in terms of yardage. I think both lines of scrimmage that they have is incredibly dominant. I think the problem with Texas A&M and their argument, and they deserve to be number three, they have a couple of games this season where they've had some concerning results. The Arkansas game was a concerning result. The Auburn game being as close as it was, concerning. They played down to Auburn, and they couldn't really outperform that really stellar defense. And that might actually be one of the best defenses that they faced this year, that Auburn team, and they couldn't get over 20 points. And then for the Arkansas sake, and it's been an issue that plagued them at the beginning of the year and has plagued them in spots, their run defense gives up a lot of big explosive plays. In Arkansas, we saw Taylen Green and that Arkansas rushing attack a lot of success. So I say all that to say that as good as Texas A&M is and how much I love their offense, and Marcel Reed, Mario Craver, and Casey Concepcion, and I love Cassius Howell, I think that there is a potential for maybe an upset or them getting knocked off by maybe Texas at the end of the year because they have issues stopping the run.
Was there an argument in your mind to be made for BYU to be higher?
No, and I think that BYU is going to drop pretty heavily after this weekend. I don't think that they're going to play very well against Texas Tech on the road. They're one of those teams, and this is what bothers me and annoys me. If you speak on a team that's undefeated and you say that they don't belong being there and they're not going to be a team that gets in the playoff, it sounds like you're being, like, irrationally biased against them. They have not been challenged. Their best game was against Utah, and I think Utah was a little bit overranked. They have played close with a lot of teams in the Big 12 that they should not have. One game that stuck in my head is the Arizona game. The Iowa State game is another one that stuck in my head. They were very messy in both of those performances. So I really just don't know if I can buy into what BYU has done. Not to mention the fact, I think Bear Bachmeyer has been tremendous, but having a true freshman quarterback has its downsides, and we'll see if he's going to be poised enough in bigger games, and especially this weekend going up against one of the best pass rushers in the country, how he's going to step up to the plate.
How badly locally here did Georgia Tech shoot themselves in the foot by losing the way they did to NC State?
Oh, very badly. I think that performance against NC State, a really bad NC State team, no less. And they were without a number of their key offensive players in the performance as well. I think that it's going to be possible for them to get into the ACC championship game, but I think that the ACC is going to be treated like the Big 12 this year, where there's just going to be whoever wins the conference gets in. And quite frankly, I don't think anyone else should. I think that there's a lot of flawed teams. It was a really weird performance that they had against NC State, because Georgia Tech's been normally like a really solid defense, and they gave up all those points and yards and just got completely ran past. I don't know what to make of this Georgia Tech team, but they might have just shown that they're a much more flawed team than everyone originally thought.
Same thing with Miami. I mean, listen, we had you on a couple of times singing the praises of a Carson Beck and, you know, showing what he couldn't do at Georgia, trying to get over the hump. But I think it's fair to say that that team was exposed.
Well, my biggest thing with Miami, and this applies to Carson Beck and it applies to the entire team, I think they've regressed. I do not think that this is the same team that we saw at the beginning of the year. And this has been a problem under Mario Cristobal. And it's been a real big problem since he's took over at Miami. The month of November comes around, and whatever he's doing, whether it's in terms of how he's pushing his guys at practice, how he's managing time, whatever it is, the lead up towards the end of the season has led to a regression in back-to-back years. And in this year, it's a lot more stark, because what they did at the beginning of the season in some really good performances is that they out-physicaled their opponents. They generated a lot of big plays on the ground. Carson Beck was being poised and making big decisions, and they were generating splash plays through the air, as well as on defense. Their secondary, their whole defense was so fundamentally sound. They were the most fundamentally sound team in college football. Since then, I have seen in the loss to Louisville and now the loss to SMU, I have seen them make brutal mistakes on defense. Blown coverages, just not playing right assignments. And then on offense, we've got Carson Beck playing like the version of himself from last year, making awful, awful decisions. I don't know what's going to happen with this Miami team. I think they're going to lose another one. They're going to finish the year 9-3. But it's really disappointing that this is what Mario Cristobal has done in back-to-back years.
All right. As we're talking to our buddy Joe DeLeon, make sure you check him out, A to Z Sports. There's so much going on with the coaching carousel. We have to dive into it. Is this pretty much going to be at the end of the season? Lane Kiffin, you're handed a blank check. Just pick where you want to go.
I feel like that's going to be the case, and that includes him staying at Ole Miss. I'm very intrigued by this, because he keeps kind of trying to hint that he wants to stay, but we know that Lane likes to stir things, and maybe him not coming outward and being public about wanting to stay, but, again, taking as many hints as possible, is his effort to drum up the aggressive push by LSU in Florida. He couldn't be in a more perfect situation in terms of getting a huge contract and commitment of resources, because there's going to be a legitimate three-way bidding war. You talk to people that cover Florida, and they say that Lane Kiffin's the number one option, and it makes sense because Kiffin said that he wants to, you know, he emulates himself after Steve Spurrier. And then you've got anyone you talk to on the LSU side of things, and all they talk about is how they want Lane Kiffin. They want the best coach that's out there. I'd be curious to see if someone doesn't go crazy and offer an insane contract to him, because there is going to be a serious race to go get him. And also, by the way, now Auburn fans think that they have a shot in him as well, because they previously did at one point. So this is going to be pretty nutty, and I think it's going to end up becoming one of the craziest coaching searches just overall that we've ever seen.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you next about Auburn. Feels like they need to make a big, splashy hire in order to try to get up from the thumb of the SEC where they sit right now. Just hasn't worked out with their last few hires. What do you think they do?
Yeah, and the thing that's tough is that their last two were G5 coaches, but the reality is that they're probably better off hiring a G5 coach. I think that there's not very many coaches that are sitting at big jobs right now that are going to be willing to leave. We could sit here and bring up Marcus Freeman, Eli Drinkwitz. We could bring up Jeff Brohm. We could bring up all these coaches, but I think that many of them are going to see and recognize that with all the uncertainty in the sport, it's better just to stay where you're at. And I look at right now, I think John Summerall makes the most sense. He's from Alabama. He was an SEC linebacker. He was also, or he's been a coach in the SEC for different stops. I love the way that Summerall has built, he built up Troy into a winner in the Sun Belt. He has maintained excellence at Tulane. And he's one of those guys who's kind of Dan Lanning-esque when you listen to him. You just hear him talk. And it's just very, very intriguing just to hear his philosophy on things and how he approaches things. It's just one of those guys that you just, you listen to and you think, wow, he gets it. He understands what needs to be done. So I think Summerall needs to be the guy, which might not be the biggest, splashiest name.
All right. So as we continue to look around the landscape here, do you see any possibility of James Franklin sitting the year out? I know he said his comments about wanting to get back in the mix right away on ESPN a couple of weeks ago, but do you think he's going to wait for the job that he wants the most, or is he just going to take whatever he deems the most attractive job right away?
I think that he should take the most attractive job that's on the table, and frankly, I don't think he's going to be in the mix for any of the top jobs like some maybe thought he would have at one point. I feel like he would be perfect at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech has made it clear that they are going to make a much bigger financial commitment this year. They came out and said that after they fired Pry. And I think that if you're Franklin, you go somewhere where there's a lot less competition, there's a lot less pressure, and there's a history of Virginia Tech being a great program. And regionally, there are a lot of great recruits to be had in the DMV area that would love to come and play at Tech. So I think that Franklin should consider going there. And here's the one thing. How many coaches do we see that sit out a year and then actually end up landing at a big-time job that's even with where they left? I look at Dan Mullen, who took the UNLV job. Like I just don't know if there's like really a job that's going to come up in the next 2 years that he could eventually end up taking.
Unless you're Urban Meyer, who apparently was scuffling off rumors about him meeting with Penn State and Pennsylvania State, literally, government officials. What did you make of that story?
Yeah, I don't know if I really buy that. I was reading that, and the way that it was framed is that they didn't like his answer, or he was out of the running for it because they didn't like his answer about how he was going to approach NIL. And I just find that so hard to believe. You have a chance to hire Urban Meyer and he's interested in the job and you're turning him down because he didn't like his answer on NIL. I think if he wanted to be there, you hire him and then you figure out the rest after. I don't think that would be one of those hires where it'd be like, oh, this didn't work out. I think that Urban Meyer would be able to be supported by the right staff that could handle NIL for him. I don't really make much of that. I don't think that Urban Meyer or Nick Saban, for that matter, are going to get back into coaching anytime soon.
No, I 100% agree. All right, a couple more before we wrap up with Joe DeLeon, A to Z Sports. Make sure you check him out there. Brian Kelly, is there any like attempt to make a case for another big program to bring him in? I just have a hard time seeing it at this point.
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that there's been, especially when you look at the narratives that have been created after his firing, it seems like everybody was really pushing that he is a very disliked individual. And a lot of people are pushing that he's not a very good person. I just think it's going to be really hard to sell establishing and building a relationship after all the stories that kind of came out about how he was operating when he was at LSU. I think he'd be better off retiring. I think that there'd be plenty of broadcast networks that would be willing to take him on and to put him into a booth or put him at a desk. And he's at least a strong enough of a speaker that I think that he would succeed in an area like that. But no, I don't see any jobs that would express real interest.
If you had to pick, is there one coach that you could see in the offseason making the jump to the NFL? I know Marcus Freeman's name has been mentioned.
I don't think Freeman's going to jump. The only one that I would just kind of throw out there for fun is one guy that we already talked about. I'm a Giants fan. I cover the Giants for part of my role with A to Z. I'd be intrigued by the thought of hiring Lane Kiffin. Considering how good Jackson Dart has played and getting a chance to connect them, the two of them together. I just think that would be really, really intriguing if you could convince him to jump to the NFL. And he's had failures when he was the Raiders coach and it didn't work out. It was so long ago, you kind of wonder, would he be willing to consider, you know, taking on a completely new challenge with a less crazy owner than Al Davis?
And as we know, a quarterback that he essentially helped become the new franchise quarterback in New York, the perfect fit there. And hopefully, you know, next year, Scataboo and Neighbors could at least be back for part of the season. We'll see. All right, Joe, great stuff. We'll check you out as always on A to Z. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. That is Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports. When we get back, we'll continue the Falcons conversation. You want all the latest insight and info on where this team stands right now? Torrey McElhaney is probably the best person to talk to right now. Senior writer, reporter, host for the official AtlantaFalcons.com website. She has all the latest on injuries, travel, and more on Chris Thomas Tonight, 92.9 The Game.